This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin and Nightwing.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review.
Hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com.
And on your favorite podcast app.
Gotham City is out of control.
An entire city screaming in fear.
Supervillains walk the streets, preying on the innocent.
They will learn the true nature of harm.
The police are powerless. A creature prowls this urban wasteland.
Who's that?
He moves in darkness. For some, he is a rumor. A name whispered in the corridors of the underworld, waiting for the chance to strike. Let every criminal know the acid taste of fear.
You crazy!
Bat! Giant bat!
Gotham has forgotten what justice means. The Dark Knight is here to remind them.
Angel! Who are you?
Batman. Good guys wear black.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 299 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal. With me, my good friend, good brother, it's Liam. Liam, we are starting a brand new month here. We are leaving the sunny skies of Dakotas. We spent an entire month with Static and Gear and the gang there. We have turned the page. We are coming up on a monumental milestone episode in just 1 week. So we figured, hey, we need to head back home for such a momentous occasion. And what do you know, we're kicking it off with a review right where we left off with Batman the Animated Series, with one of our probably most watched, if we had a ticker to keep track of episodes by sheer access that we had to this episode as a child or as children. I'd say this one probably ranks pretty high here with the episode we're going to review this week.
That's right. One of the most viewed episodes in our household. I would I don't think that's a unfair estimate here, as this week we are back in the world of Batman the Animated Series, the town, the time period. I say world, Cal.
Correct. The show. We know.
We're talking about that show, and we are talking about the episode Riddler's Reform, a very memorable one.
That is right. We alluded to it last week. If you didn't hear that episode, check that out in the archives at DCAUReview.com. And on your favorite podcast app, where we reviewed Romeo in the Mix, which featured a guest starring appearance from real life 2000s pop sensation Lil Romeo as he came to Dakota. But we mentioned at the tail end of that episode, Liam, the reason why Riddler's Reform is so important to us and memorable and was often viewed was because it was on the Warner Brothers VHS home video, The Riddler of the Adventures in Batman and Robin videotape that we owned. And there was two episodes on that. One was if you're not so smart, why aren't you rich? And the other one was Riddler's Reform. So you got a double feature on that that particular videotape. And as I mentioned, it was certainly one that we enjoyed. And it's going to be interesting to see how this one holds up for both of us as we come up with our own review this week, as we get into our four categories and our own synopsis. Before we do that, we'll get the official Internet Movie Database IMDb synopsis here in just a second. Before we do that, we will remind you that this episode originally aired on the Fox Kids programming block here in the United States on September the 24th, 1994, Liam, which means we're coming up here on the 30th anniversary in just a few short months here of this episode's original debut. And of course, before we get into the official IMDb synopsis, we'll remind you that this week's IMDb synopsis is brought to you by, as it always is, The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today and subscribe. And not only can you get access to our entire catalog, including every single episode that we've done thus far, including What is Reality? And if you're so smart, why aren't you rich? The previous Riddler episodes, but also every other DCAU episode that we've done thus far, as well as two additional podcasts, which feature the Jump on the Batwagon podcast from James over at the Watchtower Database, and of course also the entire Tin Talk podcast library, all in one convenient space for your listening pleasure. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and subscribe.
Absolutely. So this is the synopsis for Riddler's Reform, which was written by Randy Rogel, Paul Dini, and Alan Burnett, directed by friend of the show Dan Reba, with music by Michael McQuestion and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. The Riddler has apparently gone straight, but Batman is not so sure. Now, there's a classic.
You've got to be kidding me.
Nope, that's all we get. That, I would say, is a good summation of the first scene of the episode. we'll just have to do the heavy lifting once again this week. When we get into the plot breakdown. But yes, as we see a newspaper headline at the start that it looks like the Riddler has been released from prison on good behavior.
Is this common practice? I guess it is when you're in an insane city as Gotham is, that it's news, it's local news, the top story of local news when a arch criminal gets released from prison. It's just a bolo for everybody.
It's funny because later in the episode, we hear like a news report about the Penguin being like on trial currently.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you imagine at this point in Gotham, like every other day, either a criminal is on trial or being released from prison.
Right.
Or Arkham. You'd think it would be so common that it wouldn't at least make the front page anymore. But I guess it's still a big deal. He did trap the commissioner in a magic virtual reality machine that one time. So so the Riddler has been released, but right at the start of the episode we see him in full Riddler regalia waiting for a truck to drop off some sort of what appear to be some sort of ill-gotten gains. And of course Batman and Robin are right there to confront him, thinking that he's right back to his old criminal ways after getting out of Arkham.
Well, well, well. Look who's here.
Up to your old tricks already, huh, Nigma?
Whatever are you talking about, Batman?
The last time you delivered one of these, it almost killed Commissioner Gordon.
What's your point?
What's in the box?
None of your business.
I'm making it my business.
Stop! What are you doing here?
Don't worry, sir. We've got him. His name is Edward Nigma, otherwise known as the Riddler.
I know who he is, you young fool.
It's all right, CB. These are two old friends of mine. Before you louts sink your fists into me, I'd like you to meet my new partner, Charles Baxter, president of the multi-million-dollar Wacko Toy Corporation, and the man who has licensed my Riddler persona and my exclusive puzzle technology for his new line of toys. We're going to make a killing.
That's what I'm afraid of.
But they're quickly interrupted by none other than Charles Baxter, who is a toy maker and business magnate here in Gotham City. And he reveals that the Riddler is actually working for him. And the Riddler is not only designing toys for this Mr. Baxter's company, but also making is something of a spokesperson for them now, sort of their mascot now. And so it appears that the Riddler has gone legit, and he gives Batman and Robin a few parting words and is seemingly has decided to go on the straight and narrow, realizing that after all, he can in fact make some money off of this Riddler persona, and seemingly that's enough to keep him happy. Although the next morning, when Dick and Bruce are examining, or well, Dick is examining the little puzzle toy that the Riddler gave him that came off of this toy display, he's a little bit surprised to see that it appears to just be a regular puzzle of some sort. I can't understand how this is supposed to work. Maybe we could talk about this in visuals more. It's like a pyramid. It's like a Rubik's Cube, but it's a pyramid. I don't understand.
The pieces like slide from the corners in order to, like, they slide off. I don't know if it's supposed to. Yeah, it visually doesn't make a whole lot of sense how it was drawn up. Like,
I was like, oh, maybe Rubik's Cubes they're probably copyrighted, right?
Absolutely.
So maybe this is like, it had to be legally distinct enough. Like, it couldn't be a cube of any kind. Maybe that's right. But however, as Dick is fumbling with it, they hear a report on the news, as mentioned, in addition to the Penguin being on trial, that some antiques went missing. And that's when Bruce recalls back to the final words the Riddler had left them with the previous night about ancient history and a few other little clues. And Bruce begins to understand what exactly is afoot here, as it's clear that while the Riddler wants to publicly be known as a upstanding citizen and the face of this new toy line, secretly, covertly, he is still, not only is he still committing crimes, but of course, due to his allegedly cured compulsion, he is still dropping hints for Batman to pick up on, although they were too late in this case.
Finally in the news, there was a burglary last night in the Market Lane district. Thieves made off with rare antiquities and artifacts from the Newman Import and Export Company.
Wait, what's that?
A Ming vase from the 3rd century. An 800-year-old tapestry. I can't replace these!
Those were things of the past, Batman. Ancient history that's gone now. I'm a new man. But you probably won't figure that out until it's too late.
He did it.
Who?
The Riddler. Remember what he said. Things of the past. Ancient history that's gone now. Look.
Gee, I don't know. His riddles aren't usually that subtle. Besides, he's got a multi-million-dollar deal with that toy company. Why would he throw it away over some stupid riddle crime?
Because that's the way his warped mind works. He's obsessed.
Yeah, he was. It's interesting to see Batman put the pieces together in real time as he remembers mm-hmm. the conversation and a little bit of a flashback. The first of two flashbacks that we get of, actually, there's three total flashbacks in the episode, but the first two that we get sort of in Bruce's head, kind of putting that to a visualization. But yes, he remembers a line being dropped about how Riddler is a new man, and the import export company happens to be called Newman's, and that all of the artifacts are irreplaceable. And yeah, it's very, very interesting to see that happen. So Bruce recognizes that the Riddler clearly is putting on this persona. He doesn't trust him, and that he's definitely up to no good. And while Dick Dick is not as ready to jump on the bandwagon to say that the Riddler has not called it quits.
He's really negging the Riddler in this episode. Or I don't know if it's technically called negging when you're not talking directly to the person, but he's like, I don't know, the Riddler's not usually this subtle. Like, he's really backhanding him here with his, like, Dick's not sold on it, because he's like, yeah, he's not really that smart, is he?
Right.
Last time he just put the commissioner in a computer. Like, he's not that, he's not really that clever.
I was going to say, the other things that we remember, you know, that the kids' riddles that he used in that same episode, mm-hmm. you know, and one in the car, or the elephant with flat feet, you know, what's black and white and red all over, like stuff that are kids' riddles. So he wasn't exactly going very sophisticated for his last caper. So Robin does have a point, but I think Batman's right to certainly trust his gut, as we see just then, by coincidence, a commercial comes on for the Baxter's Toy Company, and it features the Riddler, who spouts off that he's about to drop riddle number 3175-3701, on a chalkboard, and then he flips it over, and there's a map listed on the other side. And this is Bruce assumes that the whatever riddle that he told is probably nonsensical and doesn't have anything to do with it, but the number means something. So he pairs that with the map that was shown on the screen, and he pulls up some coordinates that happen to land Batman and Robin right in the midst of the financial district and Gotham First National Bank. So they believe that Riddler is going to cause some sort of caper there. So they set up a stakeout in the rain to see if they can catch the Riddler's goons in mid-act. But unfortunately, we learn as Batman and Robin kind of sit there and they're standing in the rain. Nothing seems to be going on. We cut to the Riddler's goons, who are, in fact, pulling a caper. But Batman has yet to show up. And we see that the Riddler is actually in attendance at some sort of function put on by the Baxter Toy Company, by Mr. Baxter, to be precise. And he's about to go on saying Batman's lost his touch. And that's when we cut back to Batman, who realizes that in the midst of the commercial, that the number was actually flipped over.
It's after 10. He should have been here by now. You know, maybe we're reading into this thing. Maybe he wasn't sending a riddle at all.
He flipped it over.
What?
The number. He flipped it upside down when he turned the chalkboard over.
10 Leslie?
It's an address.
We're in the wrong place.
And that leads to, Liam, maybe one of my favorite sequences and the one that stuck in my head for this episode, where Bruce deduces that the flipping over of the numbers actually create
an alphanumeric a numeronym, or an alphanumeric acronym is the term, by the way.
Wow.
That's according to Wikipedia, which is always right.
Yes, it's never failed us before. Why would it fail us now? But yes, you can substitute the numbers for letters, or in this case the first two remain numbers and the rest spells out what appears to be the name Leslie. So Batman and Robin deduce that it is in fact an address. It is not coordinates on the map, as he thought. It is an address of 10 Leslie, which is where they are able to catch up with the Riddler's thugs at the very last minute, just as they're about to escape with a lot of jewelry. I guess it's a department store or something like that. They're high up on this skyscraper. There's a jewelry store on like the, I don't know, 50th floor of this tower. But there's some fisticuffs that occur, and I couldn't help but chuckle because I felt like this was the writer's way of getting the mandated Robin appearance met by the network executives, who we've discussed were demanding that Robin be in every episode, but they didn't want to use Robin in every episode. So there's a couple of times where he's systematically removed from the from the episode by various means. And in this case, he has a giant jewelry rack fall on him. And he's injured, which allows Riddler's goons to escape on some scaffolding that's hanging outside, like the old window washer scaffolding. Batman chases after them in a very exciting scene that we can certainly talk about in just a moment of visuals. But he's unable to stop them as they're able to escape in a car that's waiting for them at the bottom of the building. And in the meanwhile, we cut back to the Riddler, who is once again at this party being thrown by Charles Baxter. And it's interesting because we get to see that the Riddler is certainly introduced to a set of perks that I don't think he was anticipating. And he begins to his hubris begins to show as he's becoming very popular, not only with Charles Baxter, as he begins to enjoy the fact that he's able to kind of make him look a little bit like a fool by not being able to solve the what did they call it? Did they have the Riddler cube or the Riddler pyramid? Not able to solve that, which causes some laughter as the Riddler is able to solve it quite quickly. And then two women come up to the Riddler and immediately start flirting with him. And that's where the Riddler is interrupted and says that there's a phone call waiting for him in another room. So he excuses himself momentarily from the positive attention, maybe the first that he's received in his adult life for this mysterious phone call that awaits him.
Hello?
Hello?
Adorable, huh?
I don't believe you were invited.
I'm on to you, Nigma.
Ah, you're still chasing riddles.
You're still giving up.
Is that what you believe? Well, how do you know what to believe, Batman?
Maybe I'm not giving clues at all. Maybe you're seeing things that aren't there. But then again, maybe I am giving you clues. I could be giving you a clue right now, couldn't I? Of course, it's possible that you're just paranoid. By the way, did you see my latest toy? It's a two-way radio. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to meet the great Batman. He's here because he hasn't got a clue.
You can play all you like. You and I both know that I'm going to put you away because you can't help yourself. You can't stop. And I'll be waiting.
That's right. So, one other element of that that conversation with the two lovely ladies that he's quite smitten with is that they also bring up another device that he is debuting for this this Baxter Toy Company, which are these two little... I don't know why, other than that it's a double entendre, I don't know why they're two red balls. but she holds up two red balls and says, what are these for? And then we find out that they're a two-way radio, Chekhov's red ball two-way radio, as we reveal that, as you mentioned, then Riddler heads in to get this phone call. And it turns out that none other than Batman is on the other line. He steps out of the shadows and is there to sort of intimidate Nigma, let him know that he's on to him, and that he's going to stop him eventually. And the Riddler begins to, at this point, this is like the most smug we've ever seen the Riddler. He's got everything. Batman's on his back foot, has always been a step behind this whole episode. He's got all the praise and glory he was denied in his previous his pre-Riddler business ventures. So he's quite smug, and he actually sets off the two-way radio, and he sort of taunts Batman, tells him that maybe he is really leaving him clues, or maybe Batman's just imagining things. And then he presses a button on the desk, which opens the doors and reveals Batman and his conversation to the entire room as the doors swing open. The Riddler kind of continues to taunt and kind of play it up for the crowd. And Batman leaves, but reminds the Riddler that eventually he's going to slip up, because that's just who he is, and he cannot help himself, and that Batman will be waiting for that slip up. So Batman goes out the way he came in, through the window, in a very cool sequence we'll talk about in visuals. And the Riddler, we cut to the next scene with the Riddler and his two henchmen that had been scuffling with Batman and Robin previously are discussing things. And Riddler's suddenly a lot more depressed, a lot more verbose. And he's determined that Batman's right, and that he will catch him if this game continues. And so there's only one thing to do, and that's to finish him off once and for all, and to put an end to the Riddler with one last game, one last trap for Batman. And in order to spring that trap, he decides he's got a commercial shoot the following day for one of his new toys. And instead of following the script, the sales pitch that was prepared, he gives Batman a direct and more obvious message this time, telling him to go back to where it all began with toys. And that, of course, being a reference, as Bruce and Dick posit a little bit later at Wayne Manor, that it must be a reference to the toy fair, which is going on in Gotham City. And so that's the site for our final big moment here. Batman arrives at the scene. There's a giant Riddler box. Well, first there's a blow up Riddler that shoots a gun. This is a strange sequence. So Batman is again, still feels like he's a little bit one step behind. But there's a giant, what appears to be almost like a jack-in-the-box with a big turning crank, which he opens. And then there's a giant TV inside that box. Riddler's a giant prop machine. Like, he's... Yep. He loves his props, and I love that for him. But he alerts Batman that this is the end of the game, but there's no final riddle for him. And in fact, he's Lord Batman here simply to trap him.
Hello, Batman. This is it, the end of the game. I'm a little sad, actually. You were a worthy opponent, but then I told you I'd make a killing at the toy fair. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Yeah, all of you, doors and windows, big metal doors that slam shut, seemingly trapping Batman inside as the Riddler begins to count down. And then we see the building explode, and seemingly our Dark Knight is no more. Of course, Robin's injured, so he's not there to help out. So we cut back to the Riddler's office, where he is throwing his hat and mask and suit into the fireplace. He's calling it quits and has decided that he's triumphed over his ultimate enemy, and therefore he can finally move on with his life. But of course, right then, Batman comes back in and reveals that the reports of his demise were a bit exaggerated.
And yes, this absolutely frustrates the Riddler, who is, you can see the sort of shift in his sound, somewhat sane mind, I feel like, even in the way that they drew him. He just, something breaks inside of his head, and he just can't understand how Batman could have escaped, that he couldn't have escaped based on the time and the setup that the Riddler had placed. So he offers to, if Batman tells him how he escaped, he offers to confess to everything, tell him where all of the rare artifacts that were stolen are being kept, and even how he committed the robberies. And it's at this point that Batman reveals the aforementioned two-way radio toy that the Riddler had previously debuted, which, I mean, Batman really could have used anything, I guess, videotape or, you know, a bat walkie-talkie or anything. Like, but being undone by his own two-way radio is, of course, the most poetic way to do it, as Batman checks on the other end of the two-way radio is none other than the Commissioner, and the Gotham City Police break in at that point and arrest Edward Nygma, take him away. Nygma, of course, is still waiting for Batman's explanation on how he escaped, and Batman refuses to give it to him, which is further driving Nygma mad as he's hauled off by the police. But we cut back to Bruce and Dick, who are sitting at a nice dinner. Dick has his leg all splinted up, clearly recovering from his injury, and he gives kudos to Bruce for knowing that the Riddler was up to his old tricks, and he himself is stumped on how Batman was able to escape the Riddler's death trap.
His accomplices plea bargained immediately, told the police where all the stolen goods were, and even agreed to testify against Nygma.
But what I don't get is, how did you escape from that explosion?
Well, all the exits were blocked, and I was out of time. There was only one thing to do. I jumped inside the safe.
Nice going, Bruce. Man, I'd have never thought of that.
Neither would the Riddler.
It's impossible, I tell you! Impossible! My trap was perfect! How did he do it? I have to know! Somebody tell me! It's not fair! There was no way, I tell you! No way he could have gotten out! Somebody tell me! Do you hear me? Somebody tell me how he did it! I have to know! know! I have to know!
So Batman jumped in the safe seconds before the explosion, and that kept him safe, I guess, and sound through the giant explosion. So fireproof, I would assume, maybe some bruising if it jostled around a little bit, but he was able to escape. We cut back to Arkham Asylum, where a still incensed Riddler is stomping around his cell, screaming at the top of his lungs, much to the chagrin of both the Joker and Two-Face, who we get non-voiced cameos appearing, also holding their ears and pressing up against the glass as the Riddler continues to shout that he has to know how he escaped. He has to know. And that's where we fade to black as on this week's episode. I really tried to take the nostalgia goggles off for this one. It's so hard when we saw it so many times, and it's, it's so near and dear to us from our childhood. But I really think that the story, which you mentioned at the top, Alan Burnett, Paul Dini, I mean, who? And right. And Randy Rogel also gets story credit here, and then direction from our friend Dan Reba. Boy, howdy. Just a great story. Like, it's so fun. I love this story so much from start to finish. From the opening bit where Batman, of course, is the one that doesn't believe that this hero is, or this villain has gone straight. And in this case, he's absolutely right. And, we get I love the monologue midway through where Batman tells him, he's like, hey, I'm going to catch you. Like, this is how this goes. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't help yourself. You leave clues. It's part of your mental issue, is that you leave me clues and I'm going to catch you. And that's how this is going to go. And you're going to go back to prison. And the Riddler finally realizes, it's like, I could fool the doctors, I fooled the police, I fooled all of these people, but he's the only one worthy of the game, as the line goes.
He's right, you know.
Who?
Batman. He is going to catch me, sooner or later.
Gee, boss, you're scaring me. You're talking kind of crazy.
Don't you ever call me that! I fooled the police, the doctors, the parole board, all of them. There's only one person who's ever been able to challenge me. Batman. He's the only one worthy of the game.
But you said sooner or later he's going to catch you. What are you going to do?
I'm never going back to Arkham.
So I guess there's only one thing to do.
If he doesn't do something drastic and step outside of his normal comfort zone and just try and kill him, then the process is just going to continue to repeat itself. So to his credit, the Riddler character steps outside of his box. It's just, he unfortunately didn't think to not include a giant metal safe in the middle of his exploding convention center. You know, tale as old as time.
Yeah. It's great, because I think for a lot of the episode, we, the audience, and Batman are a step behind of the Riddler, and it feels like, oh man, like this, he is different. He is smarter now. He did learn from his past mistakes. How's Batman going to catch him this time? If anything, he's making Batman look like an idiot. You know, he's bringing him out in front of the rich people and kind of, you know, treating him like he's a goofball. Like, you feel like Riddler's really got him dead to rights, but it's that compulsion. It's that need for the Riddler. And it seems like, if the Riddler didn't leave the clues, he could probably also still keep covertly committing these crimes.
Right.
But it's the compulsion that drives him, that not only does he need to prove that he's smarter than you, he needs you to know it's him. And it's that vanity that, you know, that drives him, and that need to prove that he's superior to Batman most of all. That he cannot let go, and he's like, well, obviously then what I need to do is lure him, and once I've killed him, once I've blown him up in this building, then I can drop the Riddler stuff and actually go straight. But first, right. I need to prove
right.
that I'm you know, the smartest man in Gotham, and I'm smarter than Batman, and I need to prove that I can outsmart him as the Riddler before I let all of this go. It's like it's a great bit of like. It feels like Batman's on his back foot the whole episode, and then just that little speech he does kind of gets inside Nigma's head enough to where it makes him sloppy enough to make that last gamble to try to off him for good, and then Batman using that because he knows the compulsion of knowledge is so strong in Nigma too, that he'll do anything just to understand, to learn how Batman got out of this ultimate death trap he set. So yeah, it's a great Riddler character study, and it's, I think, this character, the Riddler character, over the various interpretations, I think can be a little, there's a desire to make him kind of the Frank Gorshin version, where he's kind of just another giggling maniac, as much as I enjoy that version.
Sure.
You know, obviously the Jim Carrey version took a lot of cues from the Frank Gorshin version, or in the more recent live action movie, he's kind of a completely different character. He's, you know, more of a psychopath and a more active physical killer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's hard sometimes, I think, for someone to wrap a more modern version of this Riddler character into a story that makes sense and is good, and while still kind of staying true to this simple concept of he's a guy who does riddles. And I think this episode, with, again, our, you know, we have three people credited on the story, as you mentioned, really great study of just the compulsion he has. It's not enough for him to outsmart you. He needs you to know that he's smarter than you, and he wants to hear you admit that he's smarter than you. And that's where he ultimately trips up. It's not that he couldn't theoretically it's not that Batman's so, you know, all-knowing and perfect that he could never be outsmarted. It's like, no, he does outsmart Batman several times, but he can't let it go because he needs to make it clear. He needs to have this ultimate exclamation point, and he needs to be the one that gets the final word. And that's ultimately his undoing, which I think is just that's what kind of the layers, the onion layers of a great comic book villain like this is. It all comes from, it's all sort of displayed in this episode.
Agreed. Yeah, I would struggle to put it in a better synopsis than that. We talk about, obviously, the thing that keeps Batman the Animated Series relevant, and that is why it holds up 30 years later, is just the layers and to the writing, and you know, the fact that the writers had the ability to write such an interesting layered story that, if you're a kid, obviously we enjoyed this episode as a kid. We watched it over and over again. It's cool. Batman, you know, escapes from this crazy death trap at the end. The Riddler, you know, he's trying to play catch up to the Riddler, all this stuff. But you take the psychological profile of this Riddler and you kind of delve into it and kind of give that, you know, as an adult, you kind of see the themes that they're going for there, and the deeper meaning behind. It's not just that he's a crazy guy in a green suit that likes throwing riddles at Batman. It's, you know, it's a psychological disorder that this guy has, that his hubris requires him to, you know, to feel like he's smarter than Batman, with emphasis, like you said. Like, it's not just that he's outsmarted him a couple of times. It's he has to get Batman, essentially, to return fire when Batman has this little monologue with him where he tells them, he's like, you're ahead of me now, but I'm going to catch up, and I'm going to catch you, and I'm going to send you back to jail. Mm-hmm. Like, we know how this goes. This has happened multiple times before, so it's only a matter of time. And to see the life sort of drain out of the Riddler at that moment, and in that very next scene where he's talking to his henchmen about, you know, he's right, I this is this is the ultimate way for me to prove that I'm smarter than him is by killing him. That's the only way that I can do this. And then ultimately, you know, he feels like he set up such a perfect trap for Batman that the fact that Batman won't tell him how he escaped from it is just going to continue to drive him drives him crazy through the end of the episode. It's just, it's written so well. It very much, you know, people will always point to the Mr. Freeze character as a great, you know, point of this is, they took this character and made him interesting. The Riddler, like you said, most people's exposure to the Riddler in this case was likely the Frank Gorshin Riddler, which you and I both have, like you said, a soft spot for sure. Mm-hmm. But it is a very, this is a very different personification of this villain. And instead of, like you said, just being a maniac that uses clues to try and outsmart Batman to rob banks, there is some depth to this. It takes those same elements, but it creates a deeper profile for this character, which creates depth, which makes when you're reviewing this as a, you know, 30 something year old man, it's like, oh, that's something that I would never have picked up as a child, and makes this so great. So for all those reasons, I end up giving plot a very strong 9 out of 10. You know, I think the only thing that I maybe kept it from a 10 out of 10 is that it feels like that end is so rushed. It just feels like it kind of comes out of nowhere. And it's not because it's not written poorly. It's just like, right. Oh man, I wish I had more of this. Like, I wanted more of Batman playing catch up to the Riddler. I wanted more of, you know, the Riddler continuing to sort of battle with this idea of, you know, he's going to catch up with me or what have you. It's just, I wanted more. So, yeah. They worked within their 22 minutes that they had, of course, and they wrote pretty much a perfect episode. It's just like, ugh, I wanted more. I could have used like one last something or other that wasn't just the death trap. but you know, beggars can't be choosers. So yeah, 9 out of 10 for plot for me. What about you?
Yeah, I went with the exact same score. It's something where I think this is such a fun idea and such a good idea, where later on in, even in Superman or certainly in JLU, when they got into the more, you know, overarching serialized storytelling model, where like it would have been fun if like this was the first episode and then like Riddler's just kind of around.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the background for a few episodes while other, you know, other adventures are going on. And then, you know, later down the line near the end of the season, you resolve it with one last, one last caper that blows up in his face and he goes back to jail. So yeah, that's hardly a crime to be like, well, I wish there was more of this, but yeah, if anything, it's like it is kind of, you do run to that resolution of Batman hiding in the safe and then getting out, catching Nigma with the two-way radio, and then the kind of the finale where he explains how he survived to Dick so that we, the audience, know, and then also has to explain, and then also cut to the end where we see Nigma just losing his mind back in Arkham. So yeah, they fit a lot into it, but it's a pretty strong episode all around. And just like I said, just a really fun, great character study for this Riddler character.
All right, man, let's move on to our next category, which of course is animation and visuals, directed, of course, we talked about by friend of the show, Dan Reba. And then animation services were done by Dong Yang for this week's episode. Dong Yang, as we've talked about when we've done these, can be really, really great. There's some stuff that they do that obviously it's never going to be the level of TMS, who are the goat of goats when it comes to animation services. But Coco usually does, especially with the Batman stuff, does a good to pretty good job, I'd say. Mm-hmm. On average, I think there are some sequences that we'll talk about as far as the highlights are concerned, things that just look really cool, look really mm-hmm. great. And then there are some other parts that I was like, Batman looks very weird. There's some weird up the cowl shots. Batman kind of looks deformed towards the end. There's some very cartoony, over the top reactions where characters sort of react almost like a Looney Tune character would in some cases. But yeah, let's stick with the highlights first. What stood out for you as far as some of your favorite sequences and things that you saw?
There's a lot of Batman in silhouette in this episode, mm-hmm. which is always really neat. Mm-hmm. But they do it in different ways and with different amounts of blue worked into the suit. Sometimes it's just, you know, the black outline and the white eyes, and that's all you get. There's a little bit more detail and shading in these silhouettes, mm-hmm. which I thought was kind of neat. There's the first one, I think, when Riddler goes in for the phone call, and then it kind of pans over to Batman standing by the desk. There's a lot of blue, even like kind of going onto the side of his face, which I think is a really, really incredible looking sequence. The bit where Batman realizes that he flipped the thing over and they rush to the jewelry heist, and it kind of cuts up to the shot after the thugs are talking to the Riddler on the radio. And then it cuts up to them looking up at the window, and both Batman and Robin are in silhouette. Looks really cool, and they're kind of skulking, and Batman throws the batarang. I think that sequence is really strong. All of the bits of Batman and silhouette is what kind of stood out to me as far as the best stuff. I do agree. He's a little bit, Batman especially doesn't really have a consistent model in this episode, but I like most of the action bits. The bit which again is burned into my brain because of the commercial for the Adventures of Batman and Robin VHS set, which we alluded to earlier, is the shot where he goes up to leave through the window, and he flares the cape out behind him, and the lightning strikes, and then he's just kind of disappears. It's a very quick cut, and he's just gone. But and I feel like sometimes when they've tried that sort of very quick disappearing act, it can look a little janky. But the whatever they did there is just a cut, and with the flickering lights of the lightning behind him as the cape flies out behind him, was really, really impressive sequence. I really liked that a lot.
Oh yeah, that was great. I also had noted multiple silhouette sequences of Batman, just the white lenses, or as you mentioned, the sequence with Batman and Robin together, in silhouette. Lots of those that look really, really cool. I think we even get one at the beginning too. There's one in the beginning when they first encounter the Riddler and his two goons, mm-hmm. at the convention center at the start too. So yeah, there's lots of Batman looking cool in this, albeit there are some times where he looks quite off model, or just a little bit, I don't know, strange in portions. I did notice. Did you notice Bruce got a new suit? He's wearing.
I have that in my new notes. Yeah,
it's got a. It was like a dark gray on black. Is that right, or was it my having that reversed in my head? It was dark black with, or like a black with a gray shirt.
I think it's black with a gray shirt. But yeah.
Yeah. Good for Bruce. It only took him like, I don't know, 67 episodes or whatever it is into the series to get a new suit. It may have shown up previously maybe in the red.
He had a pink shirt, like a black suit with a pink shirt in an episode. Yeah. And of course his legendary, like the khaki suit.
The closet full of brown suits. Yes.
Well, he had the one where it's like a white suit with a brown shirt. I think that's in Avatar, maybe.
Oh, yeah. His hat. Travel suit. Yes, that's right. His adventure.
Safari Bruce. Love that suit. But anyway. But
yeah, anytime we get a different look, I think Dick is in his standard red sweater, the sweater vest.
I don't really. I mean, I know we've seen Dick in other clothing, but they didn't switch up his Wayne Manor attire very often.
I can picture him like in the jacket in the Demon's, mm-hmm. Quest. I think when he and Bruce are kind of doing an investigation together or maybe the Lion and the Unicorn when they're doing their investigation in their street clothes in London. But yeah, nothing. Not they didn't veer too different from what Dick normally wore. So, I will say I watched this on the Max app, and I will say I think it's the first time I've watched the episode since they've done all the upgrading HD and 4K and all that stuff. The scenes with the rain in them, I don't know if it's because of whatever filter that they used in it. I don't know what version you watched, but for me, it looked like they maybe struggled to do remastering of those specific scenes, because at least the version on the Max app, those look, I don't know, they just looked lower grade. So I don't know if it has something to do with the, I don't know if it has something to do with the filter that was used to create the rain effect or what, but those scenes in particular really stand out.
I think that's like an ongoing problem with like an up-res like this. And I'm sure it's not the same process, so I might be talking completely out of my butt here. But there was a remaster a couple of years ago of some of the classic Grand Theft Auto games. I think it was Grand Theft Auto 3, and they ended up having to pull it like off set. They stopped selling it for a while because when it would rain, it was just these big white streaks that would come down. And you could almost like it was like obstructing your view of what was happening.
Interesting.
And that's kind of what it looked like to me here. So I don't know if that's a specific problem with like, they make the raindrops like too white, and so it like affects the vision of the scene or something. But I did have that in my notes. It doesn't look as bad. I think what we have a couple like pretty neat POV shots where Batman's looking through the binoculars. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look as bad to me there, but it's also like, I think there's like a little bit of shadowing to it, so like it's a little darker. Mm-hmm. But when it's just him and Robin standing on the building, it's just these giant white flecks just constantly kind of going. And I understand the idea, it's supposed to be raining really hard and like the rain's kind of supposed to be going sideways, so I think that's also part of it. It's just there's more rain than maybe they would normally animate into a scene because it's supposed to be like a big storm.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it does, that sequence where they're out in the building looks a little rough, and like it's, like I said, I feel like it's because the rain is like made too bright, too noticeable. Like it's pulled into the foreground, even though it's kind of supposed to be just an element of the background of the scene. It's kind of pulled almost in front of Batman and Robin in that whole scene. So yeah, I don't know if that's, like I said, if that's a specific issue with like animated rain coloration in,
right,
when you're doing sort of a, you know, an HD remake or up-res of existing material, but I know that can at least be a problem in like 3D animation and video games. So I don't know if that could also be a problem here. If you're smart and understand any of the things that we're talking about here, please reach out to us at DCAU Review on Twitter or Instagram and explain this to us. But yeah, it is that rain scene, the scene where they're out in the rain specifically, looks off. It looks more like snow or hail than it does rain.
And then I felt like the animation behind it, maybe it's the same thing as like running a filter on a, like, if to dumb it down again, correct us if we're wrong, but running a filter on a photograph where you just, you know, it just distorts, like it's changing the way that the rain looks, but then the animation behind it, they can only do so much because it's layered or whatever. But the animation behind it looked dull and sort of low res compared to everything else in the episode. So yeah, I'd be interested in learning more about what that process looks like. And maybe it's just limitations right now on technology that prevent it from being able to upscale to the point of the rest of the episode is. But I did notice that. Again, I think if we were watching this on the VHS copy that we had growing up, probably would not have noticed, but because of the, you know, because of the version we're watching is this, you know, the upgraded HD 4K versions of these cartoons, that is something that stood out. The other thing that I would be remiss not to mention, there is a error that I picked up on that even the DCAU wiki, which loves its production inconsistencies and goofs and gaffes, did not mention, but there is a scene where they cut to the Riddler and his gloves. Mm-hmm. It's at the end of the party scene. Did you pick it up? His gloves are suddenly missing.
Yeah, he's got flesh colored hands all of a sudden.
How the DCAU wiki hasn't picked that up? Maybe we have a contributor listening to the program. You're welcome. If you are a DCAU wiki contributor, feel free to add that one to your inconsistencies and or maybe trivia. also, because we love good trivia on the DCAU wiki. Last thing I noted, Liam, there's a couple of cool POV shots during the fight scene with Robin and Batman in the jewelry store, where their fists come a-flying at the from the POV shot of the Riddler's henchmen. And one of them, correct me if I'm wrong, ends up being one of the infamous collector's cards from the Adventures of Batman and Robin, which is the Robin fist coming towards the, there's like one card with Robin sort of with his fist reared back, unless they use that shot multiple times. You know the shot that I'm talking about?
Yeah. That was not from the set that was like full episode cards, right? That was from one of the other sets where it was just,
I think it was that whatever the subset was, there weren't episode cards for Riddler's Reform, but I think it was just a subset within that set. What were those? What did we determine? Those were Skybox Adventures of Batman and Robin. But yeah, I noticed that shot and I was like, yep, that one is ingrained in my head as pictures go of the Robin card. Maybe we'll drop that in the on Twitter this week if I can find a good scan of it. But yep, it's right. It's actually on they have a card that's of the, it was like a giveaway card, I think, from comic book stores that were set up as like a little promotional item. And it's one of the pictures. It has pictures of 9 of the cards or 8 of the cards on it. And the one is Robin punching right at the top. So somehow I guess that one showed up there. At least it looks pretty familiar. So yeah, that's kind of where I am as far as animation visuals. So not a perfect week, as we mentioned, some things that didn't look great, but there were certainly things that were fantastic. I think even the final visual of the pan through Arkham Asylum and the Riddler pacing through his back and forth in his jail cell as Two-Face and Joker. Again, you didn't need to include those guys, but the fact that they did. I thought that was pretty awesome. Also, some good continuity there that Joker and Riddler Joker and Two-Face are forced to sit there and listen to the Riddler scream at the top of his lungs that Batman once again outsmarted him. So just overall, a really, really good episode with a few things that maybe didn't look the best. So I ended up giving it still a pretty strong 8 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went just 1 point lower at a 7 out of 10. I think it's a really good episode. I think the kind of inconsistency in the overall Batman model took it down just a couple points for me, but still a really strong episode. Again, just from the like I said, the set pieces, the backgrounds and everything are really neat in that episode. And like I said, a lot of Batman looking cool when he's kind of just stationary in the shadows. So good strong effort still, even with some inconsistency in the model work and those rain sequences.
By the way, I would be remiss not to mention it. Check out the DCAU wiki page for this episode if you want to. We posted them on our social media this week, but there's some great Ronnie Del Carmen storyboards from mm-hmm. some of the sequences that are on the DCAU wiki. And, you know, it's always cool to see those behind the scenes drawings and how they originally were kind of drawn up from the artist and then how they were translated into animation. And that one includes that sequence that I mentioned that is maybe one of my favorites in the entire run of the series, which is he turned it over and he mm-hmm. flips the board, and then Batman has the coordinates written on a piece of paper, and then he himself flips it over, and you kind of see the riddle answer come out in real time. Just really, really interesting to see that, how that was originally drawn up and then how it ended up translating to the finished product. So very cool. Check that out if you have a couple minutes this week to do so. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And Shirley Walker responsible for this week's music. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Michael McQuestion.
Oh, okay. I wasn't paying attention when you read that at the beginning, so forgive me. I guess the reason why I assumed that it was Shirley Walker is because we get a really triumphant Batman, Shirley Walker Batman piece coming through that I noted. I loved that. That's as Batman sort of chases after the goons is there. We didn't talk about that sequence. I somehow missed that, talking about that sequence in visuals, but the scaffolding escape by the Riddler's goons as they're climbing out the window and Batman sliding down the rope after them. Like, that has stuck into my head since a very, like, from a very young age of seeing this for the first time. I thought it was awesome. Batman in the rain, Batman chasing after these guys on this contraption that's, you know, on the side of the building. They're trying to escape from him. They're shooting a live weapon at him. It looks really cool. And then the music accompanying it, of course, is the Shirley Walker Batman theme as Batman jumps out the window. So that scene in particular, I thought, stood out. I don't feel like we got too much of the Riddler theme. That was the only thing that I was kind of disappointed in. You know, we do get some, certainly some heart racing themes towards the end. Some music as Batman is trapped in the convention center with the Riddler's voiceover, you know, counting down as the explosives go off. So I did like the up tempo sort of, you know, creating the anxiety of that moment. Is Batman going to escape, or is this the end of the Caped Crusader as we know him? Sort of idea. But yeah, it felt like music kind of could have stood out a little bit more. I do love the Batman theme being used, and it's sort of just, it's more of a background piece this week. And again, just slightly disappointed we didn't get much, if any, of the Riddler theme used for this week.
Yeah, an interesting decision there. I would love to hear the thinking behind that. But yeah, overall, I do really like, and this is something that's used quite a few times across the shows and across all these shows, I think, but how the composers will use sound effect as their crescendo. Specifically, I'm thinking of the explosion at the end when Batman's trapped. You get the big buildup, the bum 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 bum, and then it just all, you know, lays out, and then you get the your release. There is the explosion, which I think is a really neat way of the music working hand in hand with the sound effects.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. So yeah, I mean that the scene I think a similar thing happens with the shelf falling on Robin. Also, you kind of get the the anticipation of it, and then it kind of drops, the music drops out as the shelving falls onto him, and you kind of get Batman off to the side reacting. But I also think, music taking a backseat, this was much more of a plot driven episode that doesn't have as much action in it. It's dialogue heavy. You get some, you know, some scene setting music for the party scene with the Riddler, and Charles Baxter and all the, you know, the rich people that are celebrating his stock being up. But, you know, I think it was important in the scene where he's kind of giving his monologue of, you know, burning his, both burning his suit. And then even before that, the monologue where he's kind of talking to the villains or his fellow goons about Batman ultimately being correct about that, and that he was going to be caught. There's sort of some understated stuff in that scene that was played down, because the focus really is on, as we'll talk about in a minute here, when you have such great voice acting, the focus can be on the voices as opposed to, you know, creating just sort of noise in the background, as we so often, or not so often, but when we bring up the Marvel cartoons, those tended to be guilty of that, of the same time frame. Mm-hmm. They would play almost too much music and not let the voices breathe. So I get the idea of wanting the music to lay back a little bit. And I think Mr. McQuishan did a good job with that. Overall though, I didn't think, other than maybe the scene where Batman jumps out the window, you know, there's a great lightning strike and musical accompaniment that comes with that, as they look at him or try to figure out where he went. And then the scene on the scaffolding, not a lot that stood out to me. So I ended up giving it still a pretty strong 7 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, just 1 point lower at 6 out of 10. Like I said, I like some of those big moments and how it played with what was happening in the scene and allowed either the, as you said, the voice acting or the other sound effects to kind of take the lead. But yeah, nothing spectacular, but still a very, very strong job by Mr. McQuestion.
Absolutely. Let's move it on now, Liam, to our final category of the day, which is going to be voice acting. And we don't have a huge cast this week, but I'd say well worth talking about our main players here. We do have a couple of minor roles for a couple of people also. Let's go ahead and review this week's voice cast, shall we?
Yeah, it's a bit of a family affair indirectly here, as voicing Mr. Charles Baxter is none other than Peter Mark Richman, who was, at the time at least, was Lauren Lester's father-in-law. So,
oh, go figure.
So fun little role for him. I believe he was also in some of the Friday the 13th movies as well. But he doesn't have much to do. He's just kind of this rich old oaf. But yeah, I think he does a solid job with what's asked of him. And then elsewhere we have playing the two thugs, we have Robert Pastorelli as Manny, and we have William Catt, who was the Green Guardsman in Justice League later on.
Hey,
as Zowie or Zoe, I forget how they pronounce it, but
Zoe, I think. Yeah,
yeah, they get a little bit to do here. Like they're like slightly, they're not quite like, you know, Rhino, Earl Bowen's Rhino or anything, as far as like a thug that gets to talk to the boss. But I do like them playing off of you know, who we'll talk about more in depth in a minute, John Glover, as far as them trying to understand exactly where his you know, where his mind's at when they seem to think everything's going great, but it's clear that the Riddler's already thinking about the end game there. So they're slightly above. Like I said, they're not on the level of like the Three Stooges thugs from the new Batman Adventures or Rhino or anybody, but it's a fun, they're a fun little duo there. And elsewhere, yeah, we briefly have Marie Devon as Summer Gleason, and even briefer perhaps have Bob Hastings as Commissioner Gordon. And then, yeah, of course, this is going to be, I feel like we should save the villain for last, because it's really his episode. But obviously we have our two main heroes to talk about, Lauren Lester as Robin slash Dick Grayson, and Kevin Conroy as Bruce Wayne and Batman. Fun episode for them. I remember, you know, when the DVDs come out and they're talking about doing the Riddler in the show. It's funny because they talk about, I know there's at least a talking head from Bruce Timm, and I think from Eric Radomski as well, saying like, well, we didn't want it to be like the Adam West show where they're like standing around puzzling out riddles. That's some of my most favorite parts of this episode, or where it's just Bruce and Dick in Wayne Manor trying to figure things out, or them, like you mentioned, the he flipped it over, you know, needle drop, or when the shoe drops there, I think is a great bit. So a lot of the episode is them puzzling over the riddles, which is funny because they said they didn't really want to do that with this version of the Riddler. But I think that's some very good stuff as far as just the interplay between them as partners and co-detectives in this episode is kind of fun.
Yeah, I Dick is less of the quip machine. He still gets a couple of quips in. I do like when the Riddler at the beginning says, he says something along the lines of, you know,
he'll make a killing.
I think that's right. Yes, that's what I'm afraid of. Yeah, so he gets a couple of quips in there for sure, but he's not just straight up quipping. And he does get to kind of be the foil to trust the Riddler a little bit more. But I do, like you pointed out, I do like that it's more based on the fact of what he typically does, his style, versus the fact that he doesn't trust that he couldn't revert to criminal behavior. So yeah, them going back and forth, certainly them standing out in the rain and having their back and forth and trying to you know, figure out what the Riddler is up to. Yeah, it's all great. It's a good showcase, honestly. And maybe it is because we saw it so many times, but it's one of the better episodes that we get them kind of at equals kind of at this point, as opposed to Robin just being the sidekick that says a couple of funny lines for the episode. They do kind of get to work through the case together, even if Robin is taken out midway through the episode.
Absolutely, yeah. They're a lot of fun. Then, of course, Kevin Conroy getting to play off our main villain of the piece, the returning John Glover as the Riddler. Oh man, but what we loved about it, we've obviously talked a lot about the plot, about what a fun episode this is, but the way Mr. Glover plays it, where he's so dripping with he thinks his ish don't stink, like he's so smug in the first half of this episode when he's kind of one step ahead on Batman, and then the switch, as we mentioned, when Batman gives him that speech in front of everyone and kind of puts him in his place about, you know, you can't help yourself, you're going to slip up eventually and I'll be there to stop you, and the complete shift in his emotion, it's like all of the joy leaves his voice. And as mentioned, when the thugs are talking to him, and you know, he says like, oh, you're talking crazy, boss, and he just starts to lose it, and he starts screaming about how he'll never go back to Arkham. Like, he's such a, you know, he's so he has such a wide range of emotions that he goes through in this episode, the mania, as you see his obsession sort of resurface from this very sort of smug and full of himself guy, you know, hobnobbing with the rich and famous a few scenes earlier. Like, he's got such a fun dichotomy in this episode as he becomes more and more unhinged, which ultimately culminates in that, you know, again, one of the more famous endings, I think, to any episode of this series. Mm-hmm. where he's shrieking at the top of your lungs and as of his lungs, and as you mentioned, we see he's yelling so loudly even the other insane criminals in Arkham are tired of hearing it. Like, he's so out of control. He's just so incensed that Batman got out of this ultimate death trap, and two, that he wouldn't tell him how he did it. It's just gonna eat him alive forever. It's just a brilliant, brilliant performance by Mr. Glover all the way through.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, he gets such the array of emotions. Like, at the beginning, he's smug, you know, because Batman really doesn't have any dirt on him yet. He's caught mm-hmm. Batman trying to prove that he's up to no good, and then he's able to smugly show that, well, that he's just delivering toys, and he's has this endorsement deal from the Baxter's Toy Company, and then but he's still obviously being smug and laying his riddles down to Batman, who's completely unaware of what's actually going on. And then we get the different sort of personifications of the Riddler in his commercial as he's shooting the different commercials. And I love the second commercial, or the last commercial that he films, as he's walking through, there's two kids playing with his toys, and the one kid is just like bashing the Riddler pyramid on the ground, and he's like, "Not like that, don't break it."
Action.
Hey folks, wouldn't it be great to be a kid again, enjoying all those wonderful moments of childhood with your favorite toys? Not like that, you'll break it.
Just really, really funny. So yeah, he gets to play a very large array of different emotions. The smugness when he's kind of enjoying the fruits of his success at the party, and suddenly he's attractive to these, you know, to these two women, and he's getting all these heaps of praise thrown on him by the CEO of this company, and he's so wanted that he's getting phone calls in the middle of his party. Like, he's so important now, only for Batman to sort of let the air out of his proverbial balloon. So and then I think even at the end, like the maybe the most interesting part of the performance. So once he catches Batman in the trap, and he sort of feigns, it's not like a Joker like feigning sadness. I believed that the Riddler was somewhat broken up over the fact that mm-hmm. it comes to this. Like, he has to kill Batman in order to satiate this desire to be the smartest man in the room. Like, this is how it has to go down. Like,
He spells it out a little bit earlier in that scene with the thug, right? He's the only one worthy of the game.
Right, right.
This is the ultimate joy in this man's life has been going toe-to-toe, you know, on this mental battlefield with Batman. Yeah, it's not played for laughs the way the man who killed Batman Joker funeral is, to your mm-hmm. point, but it has that same very somber reflection in his voice when he's doing that scene. That's a great point.
Yeah. So I believe that this was, you know, in some ways he's triumphing. So of course on the countdown, he's all right, this is it. This is the end of this chapter in my life. But you know, the what leads up to that of him being broken up and somber felt authentic to the character and not played as sarcasm or in any way, like, you know, spiking the football. So yeah, unsurprisingly, Mr. Glover, you know, we have soft spots for him for multiple reasons, for different people that he's played in different DC properties. The Riddler, unfortunately, and I guess we'll talk about this in a minute when we talk about rewatchability, but this is his sort of his swan song as far as a lead episode. Mm-hmm. And you know, he really does go out on top here with a very memorable overall performance, and then that final scene, I have to know, like, mm-hmm. screaming at the top of his lungs, you know, in agony, not being able to figure out the answer to this great riddle of how Batman survived. Just tremendous. And you know, I felt like I couldn't love and give as much praise to Mr. Glover for this score without giving it a perfect 10 out of 10.
Yeah, same here. it's almost inarguable. I think this is Mr. Glover's magnum opus as the Riddler, for sure. As much fun as he is in those other two episodes, this is really, like we said, it's really his episode. A lot of it is from his point of view, and he just gets such a wide array of things to do. And you know, him and the late Kevin Conroy playing off each other, it's probably worth mentioning, as if you follow Mr. Glover on his socials, he's posted some photos. You know, he and Kevin acted together on stage years before this series. So they had known each other for you know, years and years when they went into that recording booth together. And I really think that shows too of that. Mm-hmm. That relationship they have, you know, the rogue and the hero, you know, playing off of each other. And it has such a grand theatrical, you know, like I said, it's so, you know, guttural in some of those moments when he's losing it towards the end of the episode, like he's so over the top, but it never feels like, oh, this is a Saturday morning cartoon, so I'm doing a silly over the top voice. Like it's like, no, this guy is he's a peacock. He's a performer of the highest order. And, you know, he needs you to, you know, to know that he's better than you. It's not just enough for him to be better than you, like we talked about earlier. And yeah, him and Kevin Conroy playing off of each other again, you know, it's a shame that we don't get another two or three John Glover Riddler performances. He does pop back up in the very briefly in the new Batman Adventures and in an episode of Superman, which we'll get to down the line, but this is his last sort of starring role as the Riddler. And at the same time, I understand why maybe the people, you know, Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, Alan Burnett, why maybe they would feel like it would be hard to top this one.
Yeah,
as a way to go out.
Yeah, no, I do respect the fact that they thought that this episode was so good. And I believe the DCAU wiki even quotes Alan Burnett as saying that this episode is the best Riddler episode for multiple reasons, but you know, it would be difficult for him to come back and have a better sort of swan song or bookend to the character. So even though he does come back in the sort of the cameo spots in the new Batman Adventures, it is understandable that they wanted this to be his sort of the bookend there. So yeah, absolutely. All right, Liam. Well, now that we've totaled up our scores here, that is a sound we've not heard in quite some time. That is the bonus point sound. And Liam, that I act surprised, but I knew it was coming all along because it is my bonus point for the episode, and it is for, as it has been many times before, especially when we're doing, well, exclusively when we're doing Batman the Animated Series, it's for the title card. And right off the bat, you can see an influence to a very famous Spider-Man comic book, perhaps a somewhat homage to Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man number 50 by John Romita Sr., probably best known as the Spider-Man No More comic, which has been done, redone, parodied probably hundreds of times now, if not more, across comic fandom. But Batman the Animated Series couldn't let it go without doing an homage to this. As somebody is getting rid of their costume, it's a striking image. It's one that I will remember until the day I die, I'm sure. The spotlight on the Riddler's hat, mask, and tie, and then him sort of walking away down the alley with the spotlight on him in silhouette. So not a straight one-to-one homage, but certainly you can see the influence there. And knowing the creators of the Batman animated series, I don't know if this was a Eric Radomski specific, you know, drawing or idea, or who was responsible for this particular card, but clearly had some influence from one of the great artists in comic book history there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mr. Romita passed away not too long ago, so it's funny that we came across this now. But yeah, it was funny because I hadn't really I hadn't looked at this title card in a long time. I didn't necessarily remember the figure walking away or that it was set in an alley. I remembered the hat and the tie sitting there. So when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. And then I looked, and of course there's, you know, everyone else in the world had already noticed it, including yourself. But yeah, definitely something you got to mention for an episode like this.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Certainly worth a little, as many homages to the great artists in comic book history that the Batman the Animated Series team would do. It's hard not to appreciate that one, especially, again, something you wouldn't recognize as a kid more than likely, but, you know, as an adult, something that you can appreciate on a different level for what they were going for. So very cool there. All right, Liam, so totaling up all of our scores now, including my one bonus point falling just shy of our top picks section, I end up with a very strong 35 out of 40 for this episode. What about you?
Yeah, and I'm just a couple points lower, especially with the addition of your bonus point at 32 out of 40. So not quite a top pick, but as we talk about rewatchability here, yeah, no, this is a slam dunk. It's, as we said, it's the finale to this little Riddler trilogy that we get in the original run, and it's just a darn good episode of television. It's a lot of fun, like we said, and like I said, I feel like it gets at what makes the Riddler tick and how you can make a character as seemingly gimmicky as the Riddler is, really interesting and a really unique foil for Batman in a way that nobody else in his rogues gallery really can be. So an easy double thumbs up, I think, for rewatchability here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a showcase of how you make the hero of your show look vulnerable, even to the very end, where he's explaining, like, yeah, I was close to death. Like, I would have died. He had me beat. But, you know, if not for my quick thinking to jump inside the safe. So I love the fact that you make this guy in a suit look like a worthy adversary for Batman. And you do so by having him take wins for the first and second, parts of the entire episode there. And then, in the third part of the episode, Batman storms back and, kind of outsmarts him, outwits him, and ends up getting to the moral victory. And also obviously sending him back to jail, but also the smug victory and being able to have this little secret that he isn't going to tell him. So yeah, it's a double thumbs up for me too, for a multitude of reasons. If you haven't checked this one out in a while, I'd say it's certainly worth a rewatch over the next couple of days to kind of get you caught back up to speed here. But yeah, it's a great episode, great performances, some really cool visuals, some good music. It's what we love when we're reviewing these episodes. So hard to ask for much more than that. All right, Liam, let's wrap things up. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week. Don't forget, we'll go through our ways that you can support the podcast. One of those ways is by leaving a review for us on your favorite podcast app. A 5-star review, of course, is what we're hoping for. You can leave a little blurb on Apple Podcasts. And if you do and live within the continental United States and we read your review on air, we'll send you a little gift as a thank you. So if you listen on Apple Podcasts, pause the podcast right now, go ahead, leave a review, and we'll reach out to you if we find your review and read it on the air. If you listen to us on Spotify, you can interact with our weekly question or our poll of the week. Check those out. You can also check out the show notes on whatever podcast app you're listening to. There's a link to directly support the podcast with a monthly donation. We greatly appreciate those that do that. And if you're interested in joining those that do support the podcast, check out that link. Or you can also check out the link to our store in our podcast story. Get yourself shirt, mug, hat, something to support the pod that way. And you get a little bang for your buck to say the same. You can also follow us on social media at DCAU Review, both on Twitter/X or on Instagram. And we had a lot of fun this weekly in posting some of those storyboards that we talked about. We dropped the clip from the Warner Brothers Home Video VHS trailer that we so love, featuring the Riddler video that we probably watched. Well, we watched it every single time we watched the videotape because it would play before the episode. So I don't know, however many times we've seen these episodes, we've watched that trailer. So that trailer always, gets us fired up. And anytime we get a chance to share it for our listeners on our social medias, we'll jump at that chance. So if you're interested in seeing us talk about that stuff, check that out. Liam does a great job of running our social media pages. And then, of course, on our social media pages, Liam, we usually drop what episode we'll be covering the following week. So let's drop a little sneak peek for our listeners this week on what we'll be reviewing next week.
That's right, Cal. And normally, and the next week would just be the next episode in production order of Batman the Animated Series. However, because it is the 300th episode of the main show next week, we've done way more than 300, but those are called bonus episodes, and so they're in a separate numbering system.
They count, but don't count. I don't know why we don't count them, but
Well, we call them bonus episodes for whatever reason. The main show where we review things is hitting episode 300 next week, and as we have done what we did at 250, we always try to do something big, and so we're going to do another big-time, meaty character spotlight episode for number 300, and he was in this past episode, so it'll be fresh in our minds. We will be talking about, this will be volume one, I should stress, because there's still many more appearances of his to go for us in many shows, but it'll be volume one of a look at Robin, aka Dick Grayson. We'll be looking at all of his appearances in the first 65 episodes, season one, quote unquote, of Batman the Animated Series, as well as some relevant tie-in comic issues, and then of course we get into the really fun stuff, which is when we look at the merchandise. And boy, oh boy, there's a lot of cool Batman the Animated Series Robin merch. So we'll definitely be delving in. That will be a real feast. It will not be like the Ink and Kirari one, where we were scraping the bottom of the barrel to find anything besides their episodes to talk about. So there will be plenty to talk about next week with our milestone 300th episode with volume one of a character spotlight on Dick Grayson, aka Robin.
It's gonna be awesome, Liam. Can't wait to do that with you. It's gonna be a great time. So grab yourself a piece of celebratory cake and bring your party hat and streamers. We're going to celebrate 300 next week with that great episode. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Goodbye.